Sharon's voice is one of those voices that just goes right to your soul.
I'm milling about at the 38th annual Santa Barbara International Film Festival, and joining me now is Randy Schmidt, and he is the writer and producer of Karen Carpenter, Starving for Perfection. Hi there.
Hi, good morning.
Are you still in Santa Barbara?
No, I'm back to real life. I'm an elementary music teacher in Denton, Texas, but I have one more day here to talk with press and to kind of catch up on this long weekend. It's been really exciting.
Oh, so cool. So I want to unpack this film. It brought back so many memories for me as a huge Carpenters fan. And of course, everybody knew what happened to Karen Carpenter, but you delve a little bit deeper. So discuss that.
My hope with this film was, similar to the book that I did back in 2010, was to tell Karen's truth, because I feel like there's been, numerous documentaries and books and things on the Carpenters, and a lot of it is Richard Carpenter and the family's version of events. And it wasn't until I was almost finished up with my book, Little Girl Blue, that came out in 2010. I was getting close to the deadline, and a small circle of Karen's closest girlfriends all came forward right at the end of that and said, "We want to be a part of this, and we want to cheerlead this project. We realize that, you're not the National Enquirer digging for dirt." And I guess I gained their trust in a way, and they knew that it was okay sharing their stories with me. And their feelings were that Karen's truth had not been told, because she wasn't around to tell it. And everybody has their own truth. And so Richard's truth isn't any less true than anybody else's, but it's his own. And so these women, including Olivia Newton-John and some of Karen's unfamous friends, were the ones that really came forward and helped to tell Karen's truth in that book and the extension of that, which is this documentary.
So what was the most shocking revelation that you heard from her close girlfriends, would you say?
I think just how bad things really got, because most Carpenters fans know that there was sort of a mental and physical exhaustion that happened around 1975. And that's when the anorexia really was apparent to everybody around Karen. But her friends told me there were many other hospitalizations and doctor visits and near misses that they, that even some that the family didn't know about, because Karen trusted her best friend, a woman by the name of Frenda, who I interviewed at length right near the end of my research for the book. And Frenda said that there were times that her own mother, Frenda's mother, would cradle Karen and rock her almost like a baby when she was, and they would feed her as you would a kid at times, where here comes the airplane kind of thing, to get her to eat something. And that was something that her own family most likely didn't know about and didn't obviously do for her. So she relied on the people that she knew that she could trust to care for her in times like that.
Mm. Carnie Wilson was an interesting choice to talk to. We know she's struggled with weight issues her entire life. So is that one of the reasons why she was in the film?
Partly. I sought out those who had spoken out saying that they were inspired by the Carpenters or Karen's voice. And so not just looking for the people who knew her during her lifetime, but people who were moved enough by her music to maybe even want to become musicians themselves. And so Carnie grew up listening to the Carpenters. It was revealed, and it's revealed in the documentary, that, Brian Wilson, the genius behind the Beach Boys, was at home listening to Karen Carpenter and, sharing that with his children. And so hearing Carnie talk about those beginnings and how that music influenced her and her perception of harmony. I mean, and then for her to go on and be a part of a close harmony group that recorded in a similar manner to the Carpenters is is pretty neat. So, and I knew too that, you know, with the weight struggles and things that Carney had been very open about over the years, that she would probably be good to talk about Karen on a number of levels. But yeah, Suzanne Summers, we interviewed, and she had been on she'd been on a Carpenter's television special in the late 1970s and got to work quite closely with Karen during that time. And then, yes, Belinda Carlisle was another who was not a friend of Karen's, but who was inspired by her music and would sing "Close to You" in her hairbrush whenever she was a teenager, leading up to those years before she, you know, fronted the Go-Go's. And but several of the people who we spoke with spoke about their own issues with the pressures to be thin and the pressures to look a certain way and dress a certain way. And it was definitely a theme that was common to a lot of our interviewees.
Absolutely. And I don't think it's ever going away. Sadly, I feel like it's almost getting worse. You know?
Maybe, yeah. And well, now with the emphasis on cosmetic changes and things that people are doing, I mean, it's to a point that it's beyond anything that Karen ever dealt with, because those really weren't necessarily options back then. And I mean, the good thing, I think, and the only good thing that came from Karen's death is the awareness that, you know, now 40 years after her death, there are places that people can go. There are inpatient facilities where, you know, severe eating disorder patients can be seen and can be working on these problems. I mean, obviously people still die from this and often, but it's understood in a way that it wasn't back then. And a lot of that is due to the focus that Karen's death put on anorexia and other eating disorders.
What I was so amazed by that I learned from this documentary, and it's wonderful, by the way, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Is the revelation that it's an addiction. And the addiction is that you lie to people. You don't reveal to them really what's going on. And she did this, Karen Carpenter, her whole life. She never admitted that, you know, oh, I was feeling sick, but you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, so talk about that.
She would find ways to blame the overwork. You know, she would never really acknowledge that it was what it was. And it was only in the last year, maybe 2 years of her life, that she even spoke those words. She finally came to her friends and said, you know, I have anorexia nervosa. And this was like the end of 1981, after her marriage had started to fall apart, and her weight was just plummeting again. And they were wondering what was going on, and she could finally admit it. And she had reached out to a specialist and was going to be moving to New York to address this. And so she did finally get to a point where she could admit it, but it was, I think there was still so much shame and stigma surrounding it, and very little support from the family, because, you know, as Cynthia Gibb, the actress who played Karen in the TV movie back in 1989, said, you know, there was that old Americana idea of she just needs rest, she just needs to eat. Agnes thought that she was just being stubborn. If Karen would just eat, this wouldn't be a problem. And there wasn't really much awareness for the good of therapy. And I mean, that's a generational thing. That's how it was 40 plus years ago. And to think, if Karen had things available to her the way that a lot of people who are struggling with similar disorders do today, I think she might have had a different ending.
I know. It's so, so sad and tragic to even think that, because she had the most golden, velvety voice, as everybody commented on in the series. Mm-hmm. Of course, the interviews with Olivia Newton-John were so special because of her death, and I was like saying, I hope he says at the end, you know, gives her a little dedication.
Oh, the in memoriam. Yes. Yeah, we wanted to honor Olivia in that way. And she's so special to so many people. And especially those who love Carpenters usually love Olivia. There's a lot of fans who are big into both. And we knew it was special getting that interview with Olivia, because not only was it one of her last interviews, but it was definitely the last one that she gave on the subject of her friendship with Karen Carpenter. And, you know, they were an interesting pair. And it's funny, Karen would call her Ange, O-N-J, but she would pronounce it Ange. And so they had fun nicknames and things for each other. Most of Karen's girlfriends called her Case or KC. But it was neat to dig into that. And I wish we could have brought more of her close circle of girlfriends together. But unfortunately, several of them have passed in recent years. And then, of course, Olivia being the most recent.
Who else did you reach out to, Randy, perhaps that couldn't make it?
Let's see. Well, there were lots of attempts to get people who had been inspired by Carpenters. And right in the middle of things, COVID really kind of shut us down. We had several interviews lined up. And then when we went back to reschedule those, it didn't work out after all. One that I had tried to get, Bette Midler, there was kind of a little bit of a feud between Bette and Karen back in the early 70s. And, Bette would make fun of Karen somewhat in her act. And she would say things like, you know, Karen is so white that she's invisible. She would make fun of her goody two shoes image. And so then when Bette won the Best New Artist Award in 1974, the Carpenters were the ones presenting it. And so Bette goes up on the stage and holds the trophy and says, you know, oh, Miss Karen, you know, I'm surprised she didn't hit me over the head with it. But then Karen had a line in the LA Times, and she was interviewed asking, how do you feel about, you know, these things that Bette says about you or whatever? And she says, we're the ones with the gold record for Superstar on our wall. And Superstar being a song that Bette Midler had kind of introduced. That's where Richard Carpenter heard it first, is when Bette sang it on the Tonight Show. And they took it and ran with it and had the hit with it. So I guess that was Karen taking her own little jab back. But I'd always wanted to interview Bette and find out more, because I know she did respect her. And in later years, after Karen's passing, even apologized in an interview that she did for Red Book, saying if she had known what Karen was going through and the struggles that she had had, that she would have been more kind.
Man, I got chills.
Yeah, I do wish we had got her. And there were a few others that John Davidson, who was in some of the Carpenters television specials.
I had such a crush on him.
I think everybody did. I mean, those dimples and that hair. I mean, he's just such a good looking guy. But he actually dated Karen briefly.
Wow.
Right around the time that Karen met and married the man that she did in 1980. I guess she was kind of out on the town some, and she was seen several places with John Davidson. So I do wish we had got to him for that. Maybe if it becomes a docuseries or something, we can revisit and add some more to it.
There you go. Did you reach out to Richard Carpenter at all for interviews?
We didn't. And that was really, I think it's understandable when you watch the documentary as to why we wouldn't. Just knowing that I don't think he's a big fan of my book because of, you know, the depth of some of the family secrets and things that it revealed. But knowing too that all of these other projects in the past that have had his participation have also come with the editorial control that he would require. And we really wanted this to be an unauthorized documentary and to be something that was not just a whitewashed retelling of the same thing. So that was intentional that we didn't reach out. We really wanted to tell a different story. And like I said, telling Karen's truth versus the other truth that has been told through various documentaries and books and things.
Well, you would think that Richard would have wanted some truth to come out to sort of help others. You know, I feel like that's what your documentary does in so many ways.
Right. Well, I think momentarily after Karen's death, he did, and he would talk at length about her personal struggles and the issues with anorexia. But at a certain point, he got tired of it and he wanted to turn things back around to the music, which is understandable. I mean, it was, I'm sure, incredibly painful to keep revisiting that every time that he did an interview. And, but yeah, he kind of turned the page on that and didn't want to talk about Karen's personal life really. After a certain point, maybe in the 1990s.
Why are you so interested in Karen Carpenter?
I was so touched by her voice the first time that I heard it, and it had so many layers to it. I felt like there was like almost like a subtext going on with everything she did, like something else she wanted to tell us. And I was a 13-year-old kid who watched the TV movie, The Karen Carpenter Story, and the opening strains of Rainy Days and Mondays at the beginning of that just kicked it off for me. And for the next 2 hours, I watched that story unfold to a soundtrack of Karen's music. And so I fell in love with the music and the story all at once. And the next day found myself in our public library and researching, and you know, never with the intention of a book or a film or anything like that, just for my own curiosity, because I was that kid. And over the years, it just sort of snowballed in a good way and grew to be the book that I ended up writing the book that I kept waiting for someone else to. You know, I knew the book that I wanted to read about the Carpenters, or especially about Karen, and nobody else seemed to be coming forth with it. So that's what prompted me to do it, especially after I got the opportunity to start interviewing some of her friends and associates, people she worked with in the studio. And I was just doing it for my own curiosity in the beginning, and then realized I was accumulating kind of this wealth of stories and information that was really valuable to a lot of the fans. So they encouraged me to do the first book, and that grew into what is this film now.
You know, sadly, we just lost Burt Bacharach, and that just floored me. I'm actually editing an interview I did with him in 2003. Mm-hmm. Crazy. But the music will always be there, and her music will always be there. Do you find that the Carpenters' music will make a resurgence as a result?
Yeah, it seems like there's something that comes along every 5 or 10 years that puts it out back out there into the consciousness and introduces it to a new generation. I mean, like for me, it was that TV movie. And for others in the 1990s, it was a tribute album with a lot of alternative rock bands and stuff that were covering Carpenter songs. And even my book in 2010 prompted, I think, a great deal of interest because it rippled out beyond that core fan group, you know, the diehards that are going to be sitting there on the day that it's released waiting to get it. Of course, that's fantastic. But if it can go beyond that to the people who say, oh, my first concert when I was a kid was the Carpenters, or we've only just begun at our wedding. And that next ripple of fans who maybe don't know quite as much, that's who we're hoping to reach with this documentary too. You know, not those who know everything. My producers kept reminding me, those that I was working with along the way on this, that, you know, we're not trying to make this for the diehards, because I kept trying to make sure that there were plenty of Easter eggs and, you know, photographs that had never been seen and footage that had never been seen. And they kept reminding me, you know, we have to tell the story for a general audience too. And I think we did a pretty good job of doing a balanced look at Karen's life and music, and something that both the diehards can watch and go, wow, where did these recordings come from? Or where's that picture from? But then those who really don't know all that much about her can hopefully leave thinking, I know this woman now, I get it.
Absolutely. Randy, it was such a pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you as well. This is a lot of fun. Thank you.
My pleasure. And again, the film is called Karen Carpenter, Starving for Perfection. Will it be released in theaters anytime soon, or how can we see it?
Right now we are kind of making the film festival circuit, and so we just had our premiere this past weekend at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, of course, as you mentioned at the top of the interview. And we're going to Sedona in a couple of weeks for a film festival screening there. And there are several others on the horizon throughout this spring. And of course, the hope is to get a distributor at some point and get this thing out there so that the masses will be able to see it on a streamer or a network or something like that.
Absolutely. Well, we're getting the word out right here.
Absolutely. Thanks for your help.
Take good care.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. So much of life ahead. We'll find a place where there's room to grow. And yes, we've just begun.
Always news.
Always refreshing.
Always candid.
Always milling about.
Robin Milling delivers what celebrities are saying to you.